For more talks and meditations, go to GloriaKGreen.com. So today's topic is cultivating inner strengths, because to face our challenges and our vulnerabilities, we need inner strength. And Rick Hansen says, inner strengths are the supplies you've got in your pack as you make your way down the twisting and often hard road of life. They include a positive mood, common sense, integrity, inner peace, determination, and a warm heart. Researchers have identified other strengths as well, such as self-compassion, secure attachment, emotional intelligence, learned optimism, the relaxation response, self-esteem, distress tolerance, self-regulation, resilience, and executive functions. On average, about one-third of a person's strengths are innate. That's just one-third, built into his or her genetically based temperament, talents, moods, and personality. The other two-thirds are developed over time. You get them by growing them. And I think that's what we do here at Mindful Moments, is we try to grow our inner strengths. We've talked a lot about neuroplasticity, how your brain is shaped on where you focus and rest your attention. And if you give in to your brain's negativity bias, you allow your brain to focus on self-criticism, worrying, slights, and stress. But if you train your brain to rest on the good, you'll shape your brain for a positive mood and a sense of self-worth. So let's do a short reflection. Getting into a meditative posture. And just taking some long, slow, deep breaths to bring yourself back into the present moment. Feeling your feet on the ground, your sit bones on the chair. And here's some questions from Brené Brown to ask yourself. Are my choices comforting and nourishing my spirit? Or are they temporary reprieves from vulnerability and difficult emotions that ultimately diminish my spirit? Again, are your choices comforting and nourishing? Or are they temporary reprieves from vulnerability? Temporary reprieves from difficult emotions that ultimately diminish your spirit. Are your choices leading to your wholeheartedness? Or do they leave you feeling empty and searching? And bringing your attention back to just your body sitting here, breathing. And noticing whether the choice to sit is nourishing or diminishing. Noticing how letting go of the past and the future, just being in the present moment, can bring you energy. And a feeling of okayness. And when you're ready, feel free to open your eyes and rejoin the group. So if your answers to those questions mirrored anything like mine, it's really important to cultivate inner strengths, so that my choices will be nourishing for me and not be just a reprieve from something difficult that I don't want to deal with. And so I've been thinking about it, and typically I think when I last time I talked about inner strength and mindful moments, I really just focused on loving kindness and self-compassion and maybe a little gratitude. But as I look back on my journey and what really has been important in cultivating my inner strengths, I found that one of the first things I have to focus on is learning to become calm and stable. You know, in the check-in, I heard a number of people say, I stop myself when I get all wound up. I can stop myself, calm myself, and feel more stable. And if we can't do that, we can't develop our inner strengths, because we end up in fight, flight, freeze instead of tend and befriend. So we have two parts of our nervous system, the parasympathetic and the sympathetic, and we want to engage the nervous system that's the tend and befriend, that's taking care of ourselves. Not the nervous system that's causing us to contract and push away and be very defensive, like the fight, flight, freeze feels. And two gentlemen, Matt Licata and Jeff Foster, say, remember, difficult feelings and thoughts are like quicksand. The more you struggle against them, the more they suck you in. So if you try and get rid of your difficult thoughts by pushing them away, it's like quicksand, and they're sucking you in, and it gets harder and harder to get out of there. They say that, but don't forget, befriending what is can only happen one moment at a time, because sometimes we think, I can't befriend this because it's too hard. And we're thinking, I've got to do this for the rest of my life. But We only have to befriend what is one moment at a time, maybe one breath at a time. Actually, that's all we ever have to face is a single present moment. And life is never truly bigger or more overwhelming than that. Our mind-made world tells us it is overwhelming. But in reality, all we have to live through is just this moment. And if I can get through this moment, then there's another moment and another moment. But if I look at, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to do this forever, it becomes overwhelming. And we contract down and we go into fight, flight, or freeze instead of tend and befriend. So if we look at present sounds, sensations, images, urges, impulses, fantasies, feelings, thoughts, we only have to process, digest, or deal with them in a single instant in life. They say your emotions only last for 90 seconds, and the only reason you feel those emotions more than 90 seconds is that you're feeding them with all the stories you're telling yourself. So if you can get through that 90 seconds without telling the stories, that emotion is going to fade away. But we don't do that because we're in the habit of telling ourselves the story, oh no, this is going to last forever, this is terrible, I'm not going to be able to deal with it. I heard a couple of I can'ts during the check-ins. We can, we just haven't got the skills yet or haven't practiced enough to do it. But we need to learn how to become calm and stable, or we won't be able to do anything. And one of the ways that I don't think we've ever talked about is called pursed lip breathing. And with pursed lipped breathing, you breathe in through your nose and then you breathe out through pursed lips, like you're blowing through a straw to make bubbles in your drink. The thing we all hated our kids to do. But it's good for calming. So let's just take a moment and do a moment of pursed lip breathing. Again, breathing in through the nostrils, in out through pursed lips, nice and slow. When you're ready, feel free to open your eyes and rejoin the group. So pursed-lipped breathing is just one little thing that you can do throughout your day. You don't have to set aside 20 minutes to meditate or even 5. You can set aside, you can do 3 breaths, you could do 1. And the key that I found in developing your practice, in cultivating inner strengths, is that it's not one big thing we do. We don't start meditating and have this awakening that people talk about. But what we do is we build our practice one baby step at a time. It takes baby steps and baby steps. I've often talked to you about my taking in the good practice. 20 seconds a day I did for about 6 months every day. And all of a sudden I started seeing the good in life rather than not just ignoring it. Because I went out every day and for 20 seconds I looked for something good outside and let my brain savor it. And those 20 seconds added up over time. So with our practice, we don't want to start out too grandiose saying, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. We often do that with our New Year's resolutions, and what happens? They fall apart. So what we want to do is say, I'm going to do these baby steps. And maybe I'm only going to do them for 2 days or 3 days. And then I'm going to look and say, what am I going to do? And maybe I'm going to do those baby steps again for a week this time. And eventually those baby steps, the neural pathways for taking those baby steps get stronger and stronger. And so if we can persistently do the little things like our gratitude practice, it doesn't take long for the gratitude practice, 3 minutes, 5 minutes. Sometimes if you had a really bad day, it might take a little longer than that. But it doesn't take long, and it's something that we can fit into our day. Because you can do your gratitude practice while you're washing the dishes. So if you're pressed for time, you don't have to worry about it. The key is to do little things that you're going to do and be persistent about them. Do them over and over and over. And if you forget for 2 or 3 days, instead of dropping it, just begin again. And look at what you're doing and saying, is that too big for me? Maybe I need to do half of that. Maybe I need to do a quarter of that so that I can do it on a regular basis. And the other thing that's helped me is the learning to savor. The taking in the good practice really changed my life, learning how to savor things. Often we need to learn how to lean into joy. Sometimes we don't lean into joy because we're afraid it's going to get taken away from us. You know, I don't want to look forward to something because it might not happen. And so I miss the joy of anticipation because I'm worried about all the things that are going to go wrong, rather than just enjoying the anticipation of, I'm going to be with this person, and who knows what's going to happen, but I'm going to be with this person. So leaning into joy without worrying about all the things that might get in the way of that joy. Or learning to experience awe. The other day, my neighbor stopped by with her newborn, and I tell you, there is nothing more awe-inspiring than watching a newborn make those silly faces they make. It was just like, oh, a balm for my heart. I could sit there and watch that forever. And so if we allow ourselves to take that in, the retreat I was on, when he was talking about eating meditation, he said, you know, how often do you bite your tongue when you're eating? Not very often. Think about how awesome that is, that your tongue knows exactly what to do, how to move the food around in your house, in your mouth. So you're chewing the food and not your tongue, and your food is getting chewed just as it needs to be, without you even thinking about it, because often we're not even paying attention when we're eating. But if you think about it, that's awesome, what your tongue knows how to do. What your tongue knows how to do so you can talk. We usually ignore it. So if we look closely at the ordinary, we might find some awesome things. And if we can train our brain to see those awesome things, we're going to be happier. I won't talk much about feeling gratitude because most of us here have a gratitude practice. Our gratitude practice helps us rewire our brains so we can take in the good. We look at things as if we've never seen them before, and maybe caress them as if we'll never see them again, thinking about how precious they are. So the gratitude practice is another one that's helped me build inner strengths, because if I can't see the good, then maybe all I see is doom and gloom. And my gratitude practice has helped me to not just see the gloom and doom and gloom. Rather than it's either good or it's bad, what I'm seeing now is there is good and there is bad, and they're both together. And when things are bad, I doesn't mean I can't see the good. Because if I see the good, it helps me relax so I can take care of the bad. So let's just take a moment to look at what satisfied you in the past week. What's one thing that you're really grateful for? The next thing that's helped me is developing some courage to face vulnerability. It takes a lot of courage to face vulnerability. We all try to hide our flaws because we don't want anyone to see it. Then they won't like us or they won't love us. And so we really need to figure out, how can I face my vulnerabilities? And it's expanding your tolerance for discomfort. I had no tolerance for discomfort whatsoever before I started meditating. I thought it was totally ridiculous that people would say, sit through the pain. Why would I want to do that? But I learned that if I can't be with discomfort, I'm pushing it away. And when I push away discomfort, I also push away joy. If I can't be with my sorrows, I can't be with my joys. So I have to learn to be with both. And so looking at, what do you do when you feel emotionally exposed? Friday night, I was at a dinner with people that I didn't know, and my husband was talking to someone on his side, and then there were three women, and they were kind of starting to talk to each other, and I wasn't in the conversation, and I initially felt, oh my gosh, they're excluding me. And then I thought, Gloria, there's that story again. That's that vulnerability. Join in the conversation, and I did, and it was wonderful. It was very interesting. But we have this vulnerability, and oh, well, what if I say something and then they don't want me to be part of the conversation? You know, these silly stories that we tell ourselves. Because we have these dreaded experiences that people are going to tell me they don't like me or they don't want to be talking with me. And they cast a long shadow over us. And what we dread is usually rooted in our childhood. And today it's much less likely to occur. It's much less painful when it does occur. And it's less overwhelming than we fear. So we have to learn how to face our vulnerabilities. Because if we don't, they're kind of like this invisible fence that limits us, that keeps us from doing what we want to do. Getting that courage. And I found the courage started with learning to sit with the discomfort of an itch, to learning to sit with other physical discomforts, to learning to sit with a emotional discomfort in meditation, not in real life. Because it's much easier to grow the skill when you're in a calm, stable place meditating than it is when you're in the chaos of real life. And just learning, turn toward that and look at it instead of pushing it away and pretending it doesn't exist. And it takes a lot of time and a lot of practice, but learning to face our vulnerabilities is really key to having inner strength. The next thing is curating our mind-made world. Another term I just learned. We live in our mind-made world, not in the real world. Our mind-made world is the world that's made up of all the things that people tell us we should want or we should do, all the shoulds we put on ourselves, all the stories we tell ourselves, and we curate this world that we live in unconsciously, and that's usually not for the better. But we could curate this world that we live in consciously and make it better. And to do that, it takes really three things. The first one is seeing reality as it is rather than as we want it to be. you know, seeing what our beliefs and our opinions are, seeing what our needs are, seeing what our fears are. We have to see what's really going on. And then we have to do some deep listening to ourselves. Okay, if this is my fear, if this is my belief, if this is my opinion, what am I really doing to myself? Am I really clenching up and saying, oh my gosh, you know, I'm not good at organizing and I'll never be good at organizing? And then clenching up and narrowing our perspective and putting on our blinders? Or are we going to listen to ourselves and say, oh, here's that story again that they might not want to talk to you. Face that vulnerability. Listen to what's happening. And by listen, I usually mean feeling the physical sensations in our body, because those physical sensations come up every time you experience that story. And if we don't, the stronger our wants and needs and fears get, the more we're occupied with them and we don't have time for anything else. So our culture has taught us to kind of jump into fixing the problem instead of whether or not the problem can be fixed, instead of paying attention to how is this problem making me feel? Is it making me feel unworthy, not good enough, unloved? How's this problem making me feel? And maybe it can be fixed, maybe it can't. But if I'm just jumping into fixing, I've got my blinders on and I don't even see that it's not a problem I can solve. And so we have to reflect. We have to really listen to ourselves. And so let's do a practice. And I know we've done this before, but I think it's worthwhile, especially for those who are newer. So let's get into our meditative posture. Sitting upright so we're alert and yet relaxed. And taking a couple of long, slow, deep breaths to calm your mind and body. And now silently in your mind, just say this word to yourself, trouble. Keep repeating the word, trouble, to yourself. And now pay attention to your body's sensations when you say the word trouble. Do you feel any tension or tightness? Maybe butterflies? Notice where you feel it and what the feeling, the physical sensation is. And now bringing your attention back to your breath, changing the focus of your attention from the word trouble to the sensation of breathing in and breathing out. And maybe taking a couple of long, slow, deep breaths to reset yourself. And now silently say to yourself, kindness. Just repeat the word kindness. And notice when you say that, if there's any place in your body that feels spacious and open, relaxed. Just noticing where in your body the sensations arise when you say kindness. And what kind of sensations are they? And taking a couple of long, slow, deep breaths to reset ourselves. I know that for me, when I listen with my body and understand the sensations that mean that I'm going to do something, that I can be alerted when I'm about to interrupt someone, so I can choose whether I want to do that or not. I'm alerted when I'm going to unnecessarily correct someone so that I can focus on a relationship instead of on being right. I can notice when I'm becoming judgmental, when I'm closing my mind, and I can notice when I'm starting to beat up on myself. And if those were unconscious, I couldn't do anything about them. But because I've been listening to my body sensations, it's like a bell of mindfulness that I can pay attention and say, oh, this is about to happen. And then I can bring myself back to a place of calm and stability. Because remember, neurons that fire together wire together. And if I unconsciously am bringing up all these negative trouble, then that's what's going to become stronger in my mind. But if I'm consciously bringing up kindness, that's what's going to become stronger in my mind. And so we really want to focus on this deep listening, listening to our bodies. And along with listening to our bodies, we want to pay attention to our speech. When I went to meditation teacher training, Tara Brach would always put her hand on her heart and say, "It's okay, sweetheart," to herself. And I was like, ooh, I could never, ever do that. But now, he kind of can. It doesn't feel quite so weird. I'm able to talk kinder to myself. You know, there's so many times we harshly put ourselves down in front of other people. And if they call us on it, we say, well, I was just telling the truth. Or we might harshly put down other people and say, I was just telling the truth. You can tell the truth without harsh speech. You can tell the truth with loving speech. But we don't do that. So you want to, again, pay attention to what body sensations do I feel when I start using harsh speech with myself. And that's my bell of mindfulness. Soften your speech. You don't need to be so difficult. With your speech, you want to ask the questions. Is it true? Is what I'm saying to myself true? Maybe partly true? Maybe only a kernel of truth? Maybe not true anymore? Is it kind? It's not good to tell someone the truth if it's not kind. You know, to tell someone that something is wrong that you know they can't fix, that's really not kind to point it out to them. Is it? The other question, is it beneficial? Is it going to help? You know, when you make a mistake and you realize the mistake, but someone else really points it out to you, kind of bluntly, is that really helpful to you? You know you made the mistake. You don't need them pointing it out, and you don't need to point it out to yourself because you already know it. Is it necessary? Sometimes we say things and they're not really necessary. It's not necessary for me to correct someone if they say something is blue and I think it's really more purple. It's not necessary. And for myself, it's not necessary for me to keep saying the things I've been saying to myself year after year because it hasn't changed me. It's not working. So why don't I try something different? And then the key one is it the right time? It's not the right time to tell myself, relax, or it always is the right time to say relax, but it might not be the right time to say, you did something really stupid, now how are you going to fix it? It might be better to let myself calm down and come back to it in a meditation later and maybe use the process RAIN to look at a difficult feeling. Because sometimes in the moment, if I'm talking to myself about a difficult feeling and how awful I feel, I get on that hamster wheel of reactivity and I go round and round. It's not the right time. So I can make an appointment with myself, just like I might make an appointment with someone else, to say, you know what, I need to calm down. We'll think about this later. So, yeah, if you're finding it's not true, it's not kind, it's not beneficial, it's not necessary, or it's not the right time, then it's up to you to change the focus of your attention. And remember, we don't want to push things away because what we resist persists. What we want to do is change the focus of our attention. And that's why we might do pursed lip breathing. We might just count our breaths. We might go for a walk, do some walking meditation. And if those don't work, the kindest thing you could do for yourself is to distract yourself. Listen to some music, watch a movie, read a good book. Do something to get your mind off of this negative thing so that you can, at a later point in time, go back and look at it when you're feeling more calm and stable. It's really important to do. So those are some of the things that I do to help myself become a little bit stronger, have more inner strength. Next time we'll talk in a little more detail about loving kindness and self-compassion, because those are two big strategies that I've used. And I was just talking with someone in the last week or so, and they were saying, what do you think you should do first, loving kindness or self-compassion? Or, you know, facing your vulnerabilities, or what should you do first? And, you know, on reflecting on it, I said, you know, it really doesn't matter. What you should do first is whatever's easiest, because we got to start with baby steps. So starting with a loving kindness practice when you don't feel self-compassion to yourself, it's really hard. I can tell you that because I did it. It's really hard, and it takes a lot. I don't think I could actually do loving kindness until I started doing some self-compassion. And I couldn't do self-compassion until I had the courage to face my vulnerabilities. So it's kind of all circular. They all build on each other. But you have to start someplace. And so wherever you start, start it with baby steps. And the other thing is to start it with a growth mindset. If I think, oh, this is just who I am, I'm just judgmental, it's just who I am, it'll never change. It will never change. But if I think that I can learn how to be less judgmental, I can learn how to not interrupt people, I can learn how to not correct people, then you can do it. So if you have a fixed mindset, you think, well, that's just who I am, and you've heard people say that, right? That's just who I am. I can't change it. But we can change it if we have a growth mindset. If we know that only one third of our inner strengths are innate, two thirds we can develop by growing them. And so we don't really have any excuse not to grow our inner strengths. We can do it by practicing over and over with persistent baby steps and experimenting. This whole mindfulness thing is an experiment of one. What works for you? Because what works for me isn't going to work for you. It may, but it may not. And so you've got to try each practice and try it numerous times, because sometimes the one you need the most is the one you hate the most. The one I hated the most was the body scan, and that was the most valuable to me. I hated it because it gave me headaches, because I think all of a sudden all this stuff I was ignoring in my body was coming up and making me feel awful. But because I continued doing it, only because I paid a heck of a lot for the mindfulness-based stress reduction class, did I continue doing it, that I found that that's what I really needed. And so experimenting, even if the practice is uncomfortable at first, try it for a while. If it doesn't work, try something else, but go back to it again. And the ones you're really resistant to are probably the ones you really, really need. And so, again, don't try and be a big chunk. Yes, I'm going to meditate for 5 hours because that's what I need. But start out with baby steps and see if you can't make yourself become more comfortable with the practice, because it might be something you need. So let's do an ending meditation. Getting into our meditative posture. Sitting upright, so that we're alert and yet feeling relaxed at the same time. And feeling your spine grow with each in-breath. Someone's pulling a string attached to the crown of your head, growing your spine with each in-breath. And letting yourself relax with each out-breath. Growing your spine relaxing noticing the strength of your back with each in-breath relaxing with each out-breath. Strong back. Relaxing for a soft front. Just sitting here, not worrying about the future and what's going to happen when you walk out the door. Not ruminating over what happened in the past. Just noticing, being here in the present moment. Everything's okay. Just sitting here breathing. And sure, your mind's going to try and drag you into the past or the future. But when you allow yourself to come back and just be here, everything's okay. And noticing your mind pulling you away from the present. And just shifting the focus of your attention back to your body, sitting here breathing. And when you're ready, feel free to open your eyes.